Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 19th. I'm Alan Chartok on today's program, The Copyright Forum. Joining me in the studio today are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, your music, your art, and your poetry, if you went to a private college, or your poetry, if you went to a public college. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. There are other ways to get in touch with us. Yeah, you could do it. You know how to do it. Paul, Bala, Polly, Bill, and much more all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Get in line. You know, somebody may have stolen your poetry. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. On today's show, it's the Copyright Forum. To answer your questions, we have our great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer. That means he's both intellectual and an intellectual property lawyer. Mm-hmm. He does both. And writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland, the late Metroland. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. No, he is the country, the leading illustrator. And I'm not kidding with you, folks. No. And a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. And they don't give that out to anybody. I can tell you that right now.
No.
Oh, no. No, thank you, Paul. Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She's a designer, illustrator, and an artist whose works are in numerous private collections, is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown in Nantucket, Massachusetts. Paul, Bill, and Polly, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So
thank
everybody,
you.
Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. But before we begin, I just want a moment to say to all of you, it is not easy to keep this place running. This is not New York City, where you may have somebody sitting on a board who can give you $1 million. And there are a lot of those people. I just read online that the president of WNYC Radio in New York makes $1 million a year.
Wow.
Trust me, I don't know if that's true. I can just tell you it's a lot of money. We here at WAMC rely on everybody putting something in. And I'm asking you to do that now. Now, if you can do it before the 1st of January, of course, you get whatever tax deduction there is left after this awful tax bill. And I'd like you to do it. And I'd like you to say, Alan sent me. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I really will treasure you for doing it now. You could do it by calling 1-800-323-9262 and hit 0. 1-800-323-9262, or you could go online to wamc.org, and it'll all be there. There'll be a drop down menu, and it'll be great to see you. And I will personally thank you for that, and thank you so much. The number here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's one of your favorite shows. We love doing it. The Copyright Forum. People call up. If they went to a public college, they say, somebody stole my poem. And if they went to a private college, they say, somebody stole my poem. So whatever your deal, poem or poem, we're here. And anything you want to ask, you can, because our expert panel, not only are they smart, but they are humorous and they have a good time. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Glenn in Kingston. Okay, Glenn in Kingston, you're on.
Yes, hi. I understand a trademark covers the name, but does that cover also the font and the typeface of it, of the design of the name or?
Yeah, it can if you want to protect it. I mean, I do a lot of trademarks, and you know, a decent percentage of them are logos if they have a design that they really think is distinctive and they want to hold on to. I mean, a lot of times logos and fonts and stuff aren't so distinctive and you might change them over time. So, you know, you get the broadest coverage by just covering, you know, just protecting the name. But if you want to do the logo and the color scheme and the layout and all of that, you're certainly free to do so.
But that would be like filing twice for it, essentially?
No, you can file both of them. You can file both of them together, and you get protection for the for both the words and the particular design.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and that would that covers. That covers, like, I'm assuming, just the United States and
yeah, it's like, trademark, unlike copyright, is territorial, and you have to go from country to country, which is a pain in the neck. And maybe one day they'll fix that because of the global economy, but it is territorial.
Okay, thanks, okay. Glenn. All right, and we're going now to Richard in Sharon Springs, of all places. Well, we must come in powerfully in Sharon Springs.
Sharon Springs.
We hear a lot from Sharon Springs. Go ahead, Richard.
Hello, Mr. Shartok. Anyway, and panel. My question was, I being on the creative and hands-on side of everything over here in my little house. Anyway, the question is, why can't I just go online and say, Richard, I invented this, and describe whatever you invented or whatever you wrote, and then... And post it. I mean, doesn't that give you the first, you know, this is my idea, this is my invention, this is my thought. And you sign it.
No.
And you post it.
Mostly because you cannot copyright an idea. You cannot register a copyright on an idea. You can only register a copyright or own the copyright to the embodiment of the idea. You need to have a physical image of the idea.
Well, if I were to write a story, for example, and sign it my name and post it, doesn't that make me the originator and it goes international if people enough people want to read it or whoever I mail it to?
It does make you the originator.
And you also own the copyright to it as a matter of law. But
it doesn't give you statutory protection if somebody infringes your copyright.
Yeah.
Well, I see that. Oh, in other words, if it's good enough to copy, then you don't have any claim against somebody copying it just because you thought of it.
Right.
Well, you do have a claim, but you can't go running after them until you've registered the copyright. And you also mentioned inventions, and then we're getting into the area of patent. And if you post your invention online without any kind of protection, if it's a good invention, you're going to lose it real fast.
Yeah, it falls into the public domain, and it's gone.
I see.
Now, once something's in the public domain, my question to this brilliant panel
is... It can't be taken out of the public domain.
It cannot.
No.
Right.
So one time, my friend from Harvard, long past now, was down in the libraries and found a song about Lucky Lindbergh. And he got it. We went to the Newport Folk Festival, and we performed it in the time when you know anybody could get up and do anything, and we did it. And a very famous folk singer who had the world's longest folk music show on WNYC came up to us. And he said, "I got to have that." We sang it for him, and we put everybody's name on it. We gave it to him, and when the book came out, guess who copyrighted it? He did.
But the
guy found that in the Daily News.
He copyrighted the book.
No, he copyrighted the song.
Oh, he can't do that.
Well, he did.
Well, and people, especially in the 40s and 50s, people did all the time.
Well, the 11th commandment, don't get caught.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Okay, Richard, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, that was Richard. And now we are going to, let's see, we can get another one in right now, to Howard in New Paltz. All right, Howard in New Paltz. You're on.
Hello. How is everybody today?
Good.
Well,
How are you, Howard?
Thank you.
it's kind of a minor problem. I did a mural for a restaurant here in New Paltz recently in the last couple of months. And I had a bit of a problem with the owner afterwards. I mean, he paid me, everything was fine, they liked it, you know. But something happened after that had nothing to do with the mural itself. Anyway, I didn't sign it, so there's no signature, no phone number on it at all. Would there be a problem if I kind of like went in there undercover and signed it? You know what I mean?
That's funny.
The 11th commandment, don't get caught.
Yeah.
Well,
I know. He hasn't finished it. You went in there undercover and signed it. Is that what you're going to say?
He wants to.
Yeah, and then run out.
I would say, why not just approach the owner and ask to sign it?
Well, because it was an unfortunate incident between them.
Oh, does the unfortunate incident preclude that?
Possibly. I would consider doing your signature and date on a piece of, I don't know, metal or something. You can just put some construction adhesive on it.
Or crazy glue.
Crazy glue.
I think you want a crazy glue.
Just
this one.
Run up, smack that thing on the mural, and run away as fast as you can.
And then if you try to get it off, the crazy glue would drive them crazy then.
Yes.
Crazy glue, trying to get it off, because that stuff doesn't come off.
Yes, but that would probably be the fastest way.
I'm just curious. What is the incident?
Yeah, what was the incident?
That precludes you from asking him to sign it.
Overcooked pasta?
Well, if it doesn't have anything to do with artists' rights, it's really gossip.
No, we want to hear. Go ahead.
Okay. This is my own personal thing. I'm dealing with a very sensitive kind of guy, you know.
Right. We can hear
dealing with PTSD and all kinds of other stuff. Anyway, so they had like an opening. A lot of restaurants have openings when they first open up. You know, they invite people that are involved with the restaurant. Anyway, I'm walking by there one day, and I'm looking in while they're looking out. You know, they're having like a little party, people that work there, that's going to work there and all that. So I called them up and I left them a message that wasn't very nice, but I said,
cutting
to
the chase, you weren't invited. You were not invited.
I wasn't invited, no.
Yeah, okay.
And I wanted to find out why, you know, so. I mean, we got along great. We had no problem at all. You know, people are always hiding feelings anyway. They have a little undercurrent stuff. But anyway, so I kind of let him have it in my own way. And he called me back and said, well, that wasn't called for. I said, well, it wasn't called for. They're not inviting you to something. You know, you may have a lot of friends and people that support you, but you have great
okay.
art on your
okay.
wall.
Okay, this is Alan, and I'm going to give you my unrestricted view on this. Don't use the crazy glue.
Well, let me ask you this: is the mural on an outside wall or on the inside of the restaurant?
No, it's on the inside. It's the new Mexican restaurant.
I knew that. Hey, okay, we got enough information now, and we thank you for your call. You know, I think the Polly's suggestion was probably the first suggestion, I think, which is just ask. And maybe you can get over all of this.
I think that was probably Bill's, because he's nicer
Bill
than
Westwood
me.
The third. Yeah. Thank you very much. Okay, that takes care of that one. All right, we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Myron Wine and Spirits, Kingston. Since 1960, a wine and spirit shop with thousands of imported and domestic wines and spirits and staff for questions and advice. Myron Wine and Spirits on Facebook. Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley and Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectrical.net. Cindy McMahon, Associate Broker at Hunt Real Estate ERA, Senior Real Estate Specialist, offering resources to help guide clients over 50 with their real estate opportunities and challenges. Get CindySold.com. Lori Donovan Designs, Lennox, for over 40 years, offering contemporary and estate jewelry and colored gemstones, specializing in custom handmade jewelry, repurposing, and repairs. LoriDonovan.com. And Hooked Seafood Company in Galleria 7 Market, Latham. Fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, custom orders, and holiday platters available. HookedSeafoodINC.com.
We are back, and I thank you all for being here with us. Polly Law, Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood III, Westwood III, that's his company, you know. And so we love having you here, and we know that you love the program and do something by going to WMC.org and putting something in the pot for the coming fund drive. There's a major sort of emerging emergency here at WAMC, and we're going to need everything we can get. It's nothing that will kill us, but it is really important to us. Again, 1-800-323-9262 if you want to call. If you want to call the Vox Pop, though, 1-800-348-2551. If you happen to own a Mexican restaurant in New Paltz, forget about it. Okay, so... So here we are. Let's go now to Mary in West Galway. Okay, Mary in West Galway, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, wise and learned panel.
Exactly.
And revered and loving host.
Yeah, exactly. Now what do you want?
In writing a memoir, how does one best describe with accuracy and factually the behavior of those mentioned in the memoir, being mindful of how to defeat any potential future claim in defamation?
Yeah. How long do we have? it's a matter of privacy. In New York State, there really isn't much in terms of privacy other than you can't use someone's name or image in advertising without their okay. But the problem is people are mobile, and if you're writing about people that now live in a state that has different privacy laws, you could run into trouble. It also depends whether the person is a public or a private figure.
Sure.
Private figures have much greater protections in terms of privacy where there are privacy laws than public figures, in which case you can say almost anything you want.
Earning potential, right? If the description is seen to impair their ability to earn income, doesn't that have something to do with it?
Sometimes, but generally, it's just the protections for famous people are much less than for
right.
private people.
It's the price of fame.
As a matter of freedom of speech, you just get much more leeway. You know what? Sometimes people say, well, I'll just change the names of people. But you probably should change people who aren't pivotal to the central part of the story. But at the same time, even if you change their name, if people know that it's a real nonfiction story, and if that person is recognized by his or her behavior or the description of them, even though their name is changed, there's still liability issues there. So it's, it's something you really have to be careful about.
Well, are you going to be self-publishing this, or are you going to be working through a publisher?
Well, it depends on the quality of the finished product, I suppose. I'm hoping not to self-publish it, but who knows?
If you're working with a legitimate publisher, they will undoubtedly run the manuscript past their legal department.
And their insurance company, yeah.
Right.
They will advise you on things that they feel are potentially defamatory or slanderous or libelous.
That's a good point.
Actionable, right. Okay, right.
Okay, thank you, Mary. Thanks a lot. We're really running behind here. Thanks, Mary. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to, that would be Laverne in Waterville. Okay, Laverne, you're on.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good.
Hanging in.
Good. I'm trying to figure out how to patent a family recipe, and I don't have a clue as to where to start, so that's why I'm calling today.
Polly is vigorously shaking her head no.
Well, I'm going to pass this to Bill.
Well, you really can't patent a recipe, nor can you copyright it.
Right.
You can copyright a book that a series of recipes are in, but you can't copyright or patent the recipe per se.
I had a young woman.
Okay, so it would have to be in the book form.
Yeah, I had a young woman contact me in the late 90s who had just had a cookbook come out, and she was all mad because it was getting printed all, the recipes were popping up all over the internet. And I met her, and she was chain smoking and yelling and swearing, and she was angry. And I just had to say, you really can't protect, you know, recipes, like Bill said. I mean, they're just...
They're folk knowledge, in
a
way.
Yeah. And okay. So I blew her off, and that was the only conversation I've ever had with Rachel Ray.
Well, Laverne, I wonder if you could just give us a little hint. Laverne, I wonder if you could just give us a little hint as to
get I can our... give you a hint, but I it's a family recipe. It's a icebox cake.
Oh.
And I have never been anywhere in the world, and I've been all over the world, that they actually make this cake. I am from North Carolina, so the only place that I've ever had it is in North Carolina and with my family.
Ah. Well, put it in a book, Laverne.
Or keep it secret and then go to market like the Colonel. You
that's
know?
Right. Yeah.
You know? What do you mean by that, Paul?
Colonel Sanders.
He went right to the market.
Yeah,
right?
He's kept it secret. He's kept the chicken recipe secret.
It's sort of like Orange Julius, right?
Exactly.
I've been guessing for years what's in the Orange Julius. It's a trade secret.
Yeah. Mine's ketchup.
Okay.
Laverne, thank
you. All right, thank
Bye.
You.
I
Good luck.
It.
Good luck, Laverne.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Yeah. Okay, now to Matthew in East Greenbush.
I'm hungry.
Okay, Matthew, go.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a question regarding art and appropriation of imagery. I have always worked in multiple media. And I understand the notion of something being transformative, but mm-hmm. I recall in the early mid 80s, an artist who had done some appropriation / mixed media work for the cover of a Dire Straits album, Alchemy Live. And he was sued by the Disney Corporation because he had used, even as small as it was in the scope of the entire work, mm-hmm. the head of Donald Duck somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And having collected ephemeral material from, you know, the 19th century on through, you know, to today, to use in collage, decoupage, and other types of machines and parts and pieces of computers and whatnot, to what extent do you define transformative? And is there something about, you know, Disney's hold on their images that precluded him from being able to... I actually don't remember the outcome of that litigation either.
Well, a big part of it was the fact that it was a commercial product. If the head of Donald Duck appeared in a collage that was on a piece of gallery art, and that was as far as it was going to go, that probably would have been fine. That would have been fair use.
Yeah, but maybe not in the 1980s when fair use was
true.
Flux, and it's Disney who will throw millions of dollars
right.
at the most trivial.
Yeah.
Rule
of,
number one: don't fool with Disney.
Yeah, there's the law of copyright, and there's Disney's law of copyright.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, things are much looser than they were. You know, there was a case involving Barbie about 10 years ago where a guy was taking pictures of Barbie dolls like in blenders and
oh, yeah.
cooked
right.
with salsa.
Yep.
At,
right.
And Mattel came after this guy with all guns blazing and they lost. You know, the judge said this is an icon. And if you're going to create an icon, you got to be ready for this because people are going to make fun of it. And it's their right to. And it's their right to comment on it.
And part of the difficulty with transformative, too, and with so
what does
much,
that mean, transformative?
With so much about fair use, is that it's subjective. I mean, there's no solid ground or foundation that the courts
yeah.
base decisions on. It varies from district to district and judge to judge, and it's all over the place.
And what does transformative mean?
Well, transformative in theory is if you take a piece of art and you take it away from its original meaning and its original context, and you create it in such a way that its look and its use is transformative, is changed.
It's used for different purposes.
It's used for different purposes, then the courts will grant it fair use under because it is transformative.
So Mona Lisa
depends on how it's used.
Yeah. Well, the Mona Lisa.
Well, let's say theoretically you were creating a social satire that was based on Disney's stranglehold on its imagery, and it was all about the transformation of its use in terms of the context of social satire.
That's been done a couple of times now.
Get away with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
These
yeah.
days,
yeah.
I've seen recent ones. I mean, there was the there was the one in 1972, the Sky Space Pilots. Somebody did a underground fairly pornographic underground comic involving Disney, and Disney sued, you know, and the judge's decision, you know, he fell on the side of Disney, but it sounded like a censorship case. It didn't sound like a copyright case.
Right.
And it would go the opposite way today.
Yeah, definitely.
Because nobody would see that thinking Disney was involved.
And the fact that you're talking about it being a satire, if it really is a satire, that's going to fall under fair use.
Yeah,
anyway.
That'll kick the door open even more.
Yeah.
Matthew,
yeah.
A lot of people lined up behind you, so sorry. Goodbye. Let's go to Jesse in Troy. Okay, Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a trademark question. I work for an environmental education nonprofit, and we wanted to do a program dispelling myths about nature, and we were toying with the idea of calling it Mythbusters, but then someone brought up the fact that that's the trademark name, and I wanted to get your opinion on whether it's something to be concerned about or not.
I would be concerned.
That's a cable TV show, right?
Yeah. Very popular.
Yeah. Very popular.
Yeah. Anything that would lead people to believe that you're associated with them would be not allowable.
It's also science-based, which I assume your program would be. So there's just too many overlaps.
Yeah, that's way too close.
Thank you, Jesse. All right, we'll go to Jan in Rhinebeck. Jan in Rhinebeck, you're on.
Hello, thank you. There was some comment about the problem of commercial use of a copyrighted image like Donald Duck rather than in an art purpose. But many people, I think there's some confusion about whether copyright law even applies to use of materials by an educational nonprofit, such as a college. A teacher who, for a college, a nonprofit college or organization, who copies articles, lengthy articles or parts of books to distribute to the class.
Yeah,
this
is again a matter of fair use.
I've
gone to a couple of local high schools lately because they're all up in arms over what they can do and what they can't do. And if you copy reasonable amounts of work and hand them out to the class, or these days they're posting them online.
But it's got to be a restricted posting.
Yeah, it's got to be a restricted posting. The students, other than the students, they can't get into it. When the class is over, they have to. There's all these federal guidelines for it. But it has to be reasonable. And you can't, scan in an entire textbook and give it to your students. That's considered unreasonable.
How about a chapter?
A chapter you can usually get away with, but if you do it year after year after year, there are easy ways to license these things from the publishers, and they're getting easier the time.
And if you then turn around and make that available online to anybody, that's
a general publication.
You're getting outside of fair use protection.
So as long as you're fairly stingy about it and aren't supplanting the market for the original, and believe me, I don't like educational publishers as much as anybody. I just don't want teachers to get into trouble because they sometimes do.
They can ill afford it.
Yeah.
So wait a second.
I'm not thinking of educational publishers. I'm thinking of magazines like The New Yorker or papers like The New York Times and complete articles.
Complete articles, you're probably okay. It's if you took consistently every issue of the New York Times and made it available for free, or something like the Washington Post, which has a paywall. If you copied that wholesale and let your students have access to it, avoiding the paywall, you'd eventually get into big trouble.
Yeah, maybe if you use it repeatedly. Yeah,
right.
Now, what about the aggregators, like my friend J.P. Miller, who's on our morning panel a lot? They aggregate,
or Seth,
and they send you back. But of course, when you go to his place, he sends you to the New York Post.
They're driving traffic to the original site, which is doing them a favor. Yeah.
If a link goes to the Washington Post, you're out of luck after a few downloads from them.
So just for clarification, if in my seminal work, which was strengthening the Wisconsin legislature, somebody. Thank you, Paul, for getting that. Somebody takes my chapter on this or that, I resent that. I worked hard on that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's right. Bill wouldn't like it if somebody took his hard-earned, you know, interior of somebody's body.
No, and I have several infringement cases going against people, educators, who have taken that material and who are making it public.
Is the Copyright Clearance Center still extant?
It's still there.
Well, they're the place to go if you want to avoid problems with potential problems with downloading vast amounts of information for students. Yeah.
And I should mention that the fact it's a non-profit organization doesn't, it's not a get out of jail free card. Right. I mean, nonprofits can infringe just as well as for-profits.
Sure. Thank you. Okay, let's go to Deborah in Schenectady. And Deborah, this one's got to be fast because we're coming up against what has been referred to here as a paywall. Go ahead.
Okay, hi. Thank you. I wanted to ask, I'm creating a board game, and it involves a good deal of research, but I'm trying to get funding from it in different contests and those sorts of things to complete it. And I was wondering, I have the basic format and strategy and goals and all that great stuff, but I don't have all the details of the research put into it yet or completed. And I was wondering, at what point can I get it copyrighted now, or do I have to wait till it's fully completed in order to do so?
You have to wait until there's something physical to copyright.
Okay,
well, it sounds like you have that. You have something written down. I mean, you can copyright it now and then copyright the final version later.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're sending it around for to investors, you should have them probably sign a non-disclose agreement if you can get them to do it. But you know, if you've got a hot idea to register this thing before you start sending it out for appraisal by potential investors, would be a good idea.
Yeah, probably not talk about it too much.
Yes. Okay, great.
Thanks
a lot. Thank you so much.
Okay, that's good. Now we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from the University at Albany Theater Program, working to train the next generation of performers, designers, technicians, playwrights, and stage managers. albany.edu/theater. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick and Greenwood Lake, a bookseller specializing in new and vintage books and holiday gift ideas, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001, stonesoupconcrete.com and on Facebook. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. And Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts. An independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-gazebo.com.
And we are back, and we are delighted that you are here with Paul Rapp and Bill Westwood III and Polly Law. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We will go now to, let's see here, who's hanging on? Ooh, Mary Jo in Bern. I just want to make sure. Mary Jo, you haven't called this hour yet, have you?
What's that?
You haven't called up. You haven't called up this hour yet, have you?
No, I have not.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm wondering if anybody has any words to say about using the copyright.gov GOV website.
You have our sympathies.
Having a real tough time.
It's a nightmare. I mean,
it is a nightmare. Is there any? Do I have any recourse at all?
Not really.
I mean, hire a 13-year-old. It could be a boy or a girl. Make sure they wear glasses, and they'll go on and probably be able to understand it. But I've done it hundreds of times, and I'm still pushing the wrong buttons all the time.
Well, what is it?
I'd say a nice big glass of wine.
It's just a badly constructed website.
What's it for?
For registering.
For registering artwork.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to get information. It's a great place to ask questions, but to try to register your... And they kind of force you, because of the filing fees, to do it online. But It's no fun.
There's no other way to register your work?
You hire somebody to do it. I mean, you know, LegalZoom will do it. Copyright lawyers will do it. They don't like to because it's not any fun. I hate being on that site. I feel for you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Mary Jo. 1-800-348-2551. And now we're going to go to Dave in Albany. Dave in Albany on line number 7. You're on, Dave.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? My wife is an artist. She's a painter. And a few years ago, she did a series of paintings that were based on baseball uniforms. And none of these paintings showed a team logo or anything to identify the business involved, you might say. Mm-hmm. One of the paintings she did was based on a photograph she took of a statue in the Cooperstown Hall of Fame. It's a life-size statue of Babe Ruth. Mm-hmm. And the painting that she did from that shows the back of his uniform jersey with the number 3 on it. And it's basically from the waist to maybe the neck. So there's no facial features. There's no Yankee logo in the painting. She was able to sell quite a few of these. They were very popular. But this one she won't put up for sale because she's concerned that, it is based on someone else's artwork, a statue, mm-hmm. and B, it might be recognizable as a Yankee artifact. Does any of that sound reasonable? Is that a reasonable assumption that could cause legal problems?
I know the sculpture, and I think the sculpture is based on an iconic photograph of Babe Ruth. like one of his last at bats where he's kind of slumped over.
So everybody's doing it, so it's okay.
It is a derivative work of the sculpture, and I think I could be wrong, but I think the sculpture is a derivative work of a photograph.
But it's not a commercial application. The painting is not a commercial application.
Right, it's one of a kind. It hasn't been duplicated.
Yeah, you're talking about selling the original painting, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, prints of it. I would say go ahead. You can look at the Hall of Fame website and see if they have any information about the sculpture, but this sounds like, okay. And it, like you said, she's not reproducing, she's taking a very small part of it,
right.
Which is interesting, and it's somewhat transformative. I wouldn't.
As long as you're not licensing it for mass production, I think you're okay.
Yeah, I think the original and limited
just selling
prints.
The original art, I think she'd be fine selling the original art. I don't know about making prints and selling prints.
No, I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't make unlimited prints, but I would make some prints because I don't think that's going to matter too much. And you're not supplanting any market for anything that the Hall of Fame might be.
Oh, they might want to make like note cards of that same image from the statue.
But it's a selected image. You could contact, you could make a deal with the gift shop, and then everybody's happy.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing that, you know, you might consider trying. That's not a bad idea.
I want to just say, this is Alan Chartok, president of WAMC, and anything you may hear on this program is, should proceed with caution and not believe that the opinions of the opinions of the people sitting here are necessarily legal proof.
I just want to remind you, neither Bill nor I are lawyers.
So prints are kind of questionable, but the original artwork less so.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Yep. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We're heading down. Let's go to, let's see here. That would be Michael in Pleasant Valley, where everyone smiles. Michael, you're on.
Yes, hi. How are you today?
Good.
Okay. I'm going to try to make this brief. I'm applying for a design patent for a new kind of energy that puts solar and wind together. But I'm stuck. because I've submitted some renderings and some illustrations, and I'm just wondering how much is enough before I can actually submit the patent to my patent attorney, and then he can go through the process.
I think he'd be able to tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, nobody here is a patent lawyer.
What is your patent attorney saying? I assume you're talking to someone.
Yes. Well, he's saying, his advice was, if I left all the illustrations and drawings on a train or a plane and someone picked it up, they could make it.
That's true.
That was his description. But that's a very vague and, you know, I guess I'm worried I don't have enough information to...
I want to
complete it, you know what I mean?
If you go on the U.S. government patent site, there's quite a bit of information about what they look for. I was just doing this for an illustrator friend a few days ago, and I'm sorry I don't have that site right on the tip of my tongue. But if you just Google, I believe I Googled patent illustrations and found the government site that way. And there was just page after page of good information about the way drawings are submitted to the patent office. It's a very rigorous and restrictive set of rules that you have to follow before you submit the illustrations. It has to be on certain types of paper. You know, rendered in a certain fashion. So you're going to need to know those things anyway.
But I would have you shown what you have so far to your patent attorney?
I have.
And what did he say?
He's telling me I need more.
Oh, okay.
He's telling me I need more.
Well, obviously, you know, like anything else, the more you have in there, the better, especially something as critical as a patent where, you know, you can find a prior art that has been there before that's obvious that you didn't even know about. I mean, you thought you invented it and maybe you didn't.
Well,
and so the more detail, the more hooks that the lawyer can, you know, try to protect.
But the whole purpose of patent art is to be able to show somebody how your invention works. So I think, you know, if in fact what you've got shows that, I don't see why you don't have enough.
Okay, thank you for that. 1-800-348-2551. We're running out of time here, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to Jan in Lenox. All right, Jan in Lenox, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have commissioned an artist to do a map for me, and he has completed it. I have paid him, and he is keeping the original so he can show it in galleries,
mm-hmm.
and I have rights to copy and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is this a normal transaction? I wasn't really sure. I was a little taken aback at it. He said if I wanted to buy the original, I'd have to come up with X number of dollars. And then I have another question, part two. When I'm selling this map, is there some way to protect it so it can't be copied?
Well, you cannot physically protect it so it cannot be copied, but you can. Someone has to register the copyright, so that's the protection. As far
mm-hmm.
as far as the arrangement you have with the artist, I applaud him for taking care of himself.
What you've done is you've licensed this image to resell. I guess the copyright issue should have been resolved in the license agreement.
Yeah, and you know, on all things being equal, he will retain the copyright because he's the creator, unless he, in a writing that he signed, gives you the copyright. And I'm not sure that he's done that. He's given you the license to make prints. I mean, all this should probably be in writing, but
yeah.
You know, I agree with Polly. Most artists don't realize that this, you know, that they're being paid to create the map.
Right.
And, you know, you get a copy, you get the benefit of the bargain, you can sell it, and he keeps the original, you know, as the copyright owner. But there may be other things, T-shirts, lunchboxes in Japan, all that kind of stuff. that hasn't been provided for that maybe you should talk about.
Was that your understanding of the deal going in, Jan?
Well, my understanding was through another organization, we had hired him to do a map for us, and then he gave us the original work for this organization. So I was assuming that's what I was going to get, but then he said no, that he's done other maps for other people, and he keeps it so he can show it, you know, the original to show in a gallery.
Did you talk about this before or after the artwork was done?
Unfortunately, after. I'm very new at this. Yeah.
Okay, Jen, we've got to let you go because a lot of people behind you, we're running out of time. Thank you for that. Let's go to Mark in Clifton Park. Okay, Mark, you're on. Mark.
Yes, I published an ebook on Amazon of the tweets of Trump, and I also went online, paid the $55, and submitted it for copyright.
Uh-huh.
And my question is, in Amazon, when you publish a book on Amazon, the royalties are different if it's copyrighted, and also they market it differently. But my question is, if I wanted to update the book, do I have to update the can I use the same copyright? Do I have to get another copyright?
If you're updating it, you should probably register, you know, again, if you're doing a second edition that has new material in it. But you're just republishing Trump's tweets? I promised I would never say his name, but I can't say the name I use on the air. So really, what you're protecting is the collection and the presentation and the packaging. You know, you obviously, and you don't, I'm sure you don't think you do. You don't own his tweets. You own the
right.
You know, you can register the copyright again, I suppose, but you're not getting a whole lot of protection anyway. So maybe it's just worth getting out there and selling as many as you can and not worrying about it.
Okay. Also, when you apply for copyright online, they say that it can take quite a while. Do you know, like, how long it takes approximately to get the copyright when you do it online?
These days it's taking forever. It's taking 6-8 months.
But you're considered covered from the moment you submit the application, aren't you?
Only in certain court jurisdictions.
Oh.
I found this recently. There's a big dispute between jurisdictions about this.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
I'll
send it to you. One court says you're protected when you send the registration in. The other courts are saying until you get that registration in hand, you're not protected.
Okay. I'm aware of that. Yeah. But once you get the registration, it's effective.
Yes.
When it was accepted.
But it used to be when it was still mail-in that it was your postmark was considered the date of registration.
And for certain courts, that still
unless you mail it to yourself.
I
thought I would bring it up this time. It's 2:55. Nobody has yet.
Thank you, Mark. Okay. Now on to John. On line number 5, he doesn't know he's there, but he is. John, creating app and want to use picture of famous person.
Hi. So I'm creating an app that has both information about the person or persons, biographical information, and a major aspect of this app is that the user will be able to put their own music to the pictures and make a kind of a musical slideshow. And I own the copyright to the pictures, but no right to the name and likeness of the person or persons depicted. So I want to know where this would fall in terms of having rights to do that.
We're running out of time here, so you got to be quick.
Guys. Is this person living?
Let's just say George
Washington.
It's
a bunch of people. Yeah. Yeah, but you said you own the copyrights to all of the photographs.
Yes.
Then you're good to go.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't advertising. It's not commercial use as the statute understands it to be. So, you're fine to use that.
It's an entertainment app, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Book.
I don't think it's infringement, and even if it was, it'd be fair use, I would think.
It's not about the copyright, it's just about their rights and name and likeness.
Yeah, their privacy rights. Yeah, you're good to go. If they're all famous people, you're good to go.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Okay, so we are just about out of time. You can go hear me going slow because we're not out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to no one. And thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years. Specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas, including checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. The Discovery Center presenting December break programs featuring the 9th annual Cookie Burner Stroll and fourth, and movie-making workshops for the upcoming Karner Kids Film Festival, albanypinebush.org, and the Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more, waterwheelvillage.com, and New England Physical Therapy, Slingerland's, New York, providing orthopedic, neurologic, and pediatric therapy services, now offering massage therapy, yoga classes, and fitness memberships, newscotlandphysicaltherapy.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Louise Butler for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.